is the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Thank you for joining us. We're streaming today. We're on the WGN radio app. We're on the stream. We're any place you can find us on TuneIn. You can ask your smart speaker to say play WGN radio, and you find us that way as well. And Justin Kaufman is in.
Hi, Anna. I'm in for Ro today. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Nice. Rick Pearson is also here. Yeah. He got here early because he's rearing to go for Election Day tomorrow in the city. A lot to talk about.
Let's get it over with. Come on.
Oh, really? Spoken like a grizzly reporter in the city of Chicago. Get it over with. And we were just talking about April Fool's Day jokes and why people still fall for them.
Yeah.
I think if they get you up early in the morning is when you really can get people.
What I have a problem with is not falling for it. It's when they fall for it and then you tell them it's a joke and they go, I'm still mad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they just can't handle the fact that why would you even try to joke? It's April Fool's. You're supposed to. That's the whole idea.
It comes with the territory.
It's with the territory.
It does. Catches you off guard. Kind of fun. Didn't the mayor pull a little April Fool's joke today?
He did he put out a press release that said that the oversized scissors factory was staying in Chicago and doubling its business in some form
because
for rubbing
kidding business
for all the business
in
yeah
Chicago.
So they were.
He also said he was filing Freedom of Information Act requests about himself and that his new favorite four letter word that begins with an F is FOIA. FOIA. So he was he's doing that as well.
Mayor Bits.
He's having fun on the way last
he's
few
been
days.
He's stung by a few of those FOIA requests. Right. So
certainly has. We're going to talk a little bit about Election Day coming up because we do have the mayor's race and want to get Rick's thoughts about that. We've got some aldermanic races, of course, treasurer's race, and some general stuff to get to. The Jussie Smollett situation continues to make news here in Chicago as you had two dueling protests today. You had the FOP, the Fraternal Order of Police, out there in front of City Hall protesting Kim Fox and the way her office handled, or they would say mishandled, the whole case. And then on the other side, you had Jesse Jackson and Father Flager marching against the FOP. And it was this interesting conflict. We've got some audio of that as well that we'll be playing for you, where the guy got heated, it got tense out there. But I wasn't sure that the Jesse Jackson folks were supporting Kim Fox so much as they were against some of the police policies.
I
and that's
a,
what the sign said, and that's what a lot of the interviews
seemed
to indicate.
I saw Father Flager say that this had to do with that there was misplaced to all this anger towards Kim Fox, and that it wouldn't be the case if this was not a strong African-American woman leading the state's attorney's office. So you can argue that one way or the other, but that's, I think, there's a little bit of that from the counter-protest that was happening today.
It just seems we've heard the stories changing a little bit out of her office, and it's been hard to keep track of all the facts coming our way. And the latest twist that I saw over the weekend, the Tribune was reporting that, and a few other outlets was reporting that Kim Fox gave an interview saying that my office believed that, and actually she said this in an op-ed piece, my office believed that securing a conviction was not certain in this case, even though she had told the Sun-Times days before, on Wednesday, I believe, that we have a very strong case here, and that her second-in-command had said they had a strong case, and there's no exoneration here, and yet Jussie Smollett's people and his defense attorneys are saying he's been, you know, he's innocent. So it just seems like the conflicting information there is what makes most of us say, let's get a story, and let's understand what happened, because you are an elected official, and you are in charge of administering justice or helping to do that for us on the behalf of the people and on behalf of that grand jury, which found those felony indictments.
I think at this point the story becomes just about that word justice and what the expectation is. If we are, as a society, want to make sure that there is equal and justice for all, as it says in different places on our money.
Different places is what we should believe in.
But the question just becomes, you know, was justice served? And if it wasn't served, who's accountable?
That's it. I think it is more than just about Jussie. And I think it's, you know, you could say, well, Jussie might have gotten off easy here. Did we really think he was going to go to prison? No. It doesn't seem that a Class 4 felony warrants that in most cases. We get that piece of it. You get that, you know, most of their resources should be devoted to violent crimes. And that's where you want the state's attorney's office to have its focus. But I think that the whole nature of the way this was handled made you question not necessarily just Jussie, but question the way her office handles things and the whole sealing of this. While she says Kim Fox says that was not her request, they certainly didn't fight it. And when that was brought up in court to seal this after so many things that people who are familiar with prosecution and different lawyers groups and even the Illinois group that has come out, I think the Prosecutors Bar Association here in Illinois came out most recently and said this is not normal, this is not the ethical standard, and they have questions about it, that there's enough there that you question how her office handled it beyond what happened to Jussie.
You've got the, and it's funny because I'm in for Roe today because Roe's out, but you know, Roe is like, he's Mr. Outrage on this. He's, you know, he flipped out. I could hear him screaming from this room all the way to my office the other day. I don't know. I feel somewhat ashamed, and maybe it's me, but I don't. I have not connected to the story. I have not connected with the outrage. I have not connected in a way that I feel like I have. Like it has made me emotional, and I don't know. I kind of shrug my shoulders. Like, okay, so celebrity got off for faking a crime that he got beat up. I'm embarrassed by it as a Chicagoan because I don't want our name dragged through the mud. But when it comes to the semantics of whether or not he should have gone to jail or what the case was at the prosecutor's office, I got other things to pay attention to in my life. Like, I just feel like, okay, all right, good. And I'm still not sold why this is a front page news story a week after the fact and why we continue to pour gasoline on it.
I think it's a fair point. We should ask the Fraternal Order of Police.
I know I'm in the minority because everyone loves it. I mean, the papers go with it because people hit and click, and you know, Rick.
Well,
but,
I mean,
I'm in the minority.
Where I, you're a cranky old man that I am, but no, I was angry just because I felt that here is this city that on a national stage has taken so many justifiable criticisms over things, and I felt like the city got used by some actor that I'd never heard of, and in the initial stages of this, you know, from the ludicrousness of this is MAGA country, which I thought when they couldn't find the alleged guys who beat him up, it shouldn't be that hard in Chicago,
right?
For MAGA country, I think the lineup wouldn't even get to eight. Okay, right? But I mean, I did not like the embarrassment that we suffered because, okay, there's a lot of crime in Chicago, so I can stage this thing and take advantage of the city of Chicago.
And kind of fan the flames of racial divisions.
Here's what I have from the media part that drives me crazy on this story. One, he told a story that we all had scratched and we weren't sure was true.
Mm-hmm. From day one.
Right, from day one. Then there was all sorts of leaks coming out of the police department and a really, if anything, unorthodox approach to coming forward that he was a hoax. So the police department, there were questions for me saying, why is this out in the media? Well, they did so many things that were out of order from the way that the police usually handle cases. And then you have a third thing, which is the
prosecutor. I would stop you there. I think police knew that this was a heater case. And
they leaked more than Rick Fawcett in this story that I've never seen the police department
code for
do
something?
That. But yeah, exactly.
My personal feeling is that the attorneys were leaking more than the police department was.
But they were saying unofficial police sources. They leaked more. And I'm not saying that that's wrong because that's how the media gets the truth, but I was just surprised. Usually you don't get. And then the third story, which we don't know, is the prosecutor dropped his case. So I just feel like as the public, we have been given half truths and little parts of the story all the way along. And the idea for me to now make up my mind on what I think about Kim Fox or what I think about Jussie Smollett, give me the full story. From the beginning of what happened, and then I'll make my joke.
That's going to be hard to do now that is sealed. It just seems as
but
she's welcoming a thorough review. That was part of the op-ed piece she wrote. She's welcoming a thorough review of what happened in her office, and I think that would be warranted, and it would help a lot of us understand.
Yeah. Well, look about two instances where the term exoneration has been thrown around involving issues and lack of transparency from the Mueller report to what we're dealing with now.
Yeah.
And it is kind of ludicrous to here we are on election day eve of electing a historic new mayor for Chicago that we're having counter rallies over the efficiency of the state's attorney, who's not on the ballot.
Well, and it's a nice segue because her political mentor Tony Preckwinkle is on the ballot, and in the mayor's race, we want to get your thoughts. So let's talk about that a little. little bit. We will circle back with the FOP and be talking about the Kim Fox rallies and more on that. But Rick Pearson, this is one of the first times I can remember in my history here in Chicago about there is no anointed heir for mayor, and you've got two candidates who, who could have predicted this a year ago, 2 years ago, that this is where we would be?
No, I didn't either. And you know, there was the feeling, obviously, that Rahm couldn't run for a third term. Just the baggage issues like Laquan McDonald, it had just gotten so overwhelming. There's no way that he could run. But when you had that scattershot 14 candidate field where there was a candidate for every different food group in Chicago, you know, I don't. When you get a race aside, and I still think, you know, down the road, this is something to think about, mm-hmm. is the fact that, you know, we're looking at a ballot where 2/3 of Chicagoans didn't vote for either one of these people, and they're going to be mayor.
Good point.
And, you know, there's talk about ranked choice voting and those kinds of things, which I'd love to see an exploration of, because mm-hmm. did we really need, after the 14 candidates, to now come down to this and all the money it takes to put on an election again? Turnout, latest estimate now for turnout, is going to be roughly what it was in February,
which was a disappointingly low number, 35%.
And I assumed, with two African-American candidates on the ballot, that would, you know, stir up some excitement in the West and
who's
South.
Who's sitting
side.
Out? Who do you think is sitting out? What part of Chicago doesn't want to vote for this mayor?
I think whites.
Yeah?
I mean, Jerry Joyce has endorsed Lori Lightfoot, and certainly that helps with his pocket, perhaps. But I do think, you know, there's a definite unease among whites of which candidate here. And I think it's they know Toni Preckwinkle and they don't like her. And I know I'm being broadly, speaking broad generalities here. But they don't know Lori Lightfoot and they're not sure they can trust her.
I just wonder.
And then I don't know about Hispanic vote either, because, you
Chewy
know.
Chewy Garcia has endorsed Lori Lightfoot. Right. He certainly has a following.
And Susana Mendoza. Her as well. But I don't know that necessarily translates into turnout.
Mm-hmm. Toni Preckwinkle is the Cook County Democrat Party chair.
Correct.
And you've seen more, I think, than I've ever seen, fallout, or people not falling in line, if you will, behind the Cook County chair. And, you know, think about when you talk about Jerry Joyce and going for somebody else, or the Northwest or Southwest side, or politicians in every which way. But why is that? What, is it just because people don't like Toni Preckwinkle? But it seems like the way Chicago politics works, you fall in line behind whoever is the anointed leader.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously we don't know what the result is going to be, but for Preckwinkle to lose, I think, is a stunning repudiation of the Cook County Democratic organization and organization politics. Anna, you said, you know, we don't have an heir apparent or mm-hmm. whatever. We don't have an incumbent. Yet, in many respects, I think Toni Preckwinkle is viewed as the incumbent because of she's represents the political establishment. And so, you know, in a change election, you don't want to be an incumbent, or you don't want to be perceived as right. establishment. And I think that's really the kind of headwinds I think that she's been facing in this all along. And when you look at some of the Democrats that are part of the organization that have left the ranch and gone over to Lightfoot, I think, frankly, their fingers, they can tell where the wind is blowing.
Right. Does that have an impact on what might happen to her leadership if she loses?
To Preckwinkle? Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, should Preckwinkle lose the mayoral race, goes back to county board as county board president, I think she's extremely vulnerable. And I can't say that, you know, I've heard talk of, you know, trying to depose her, but, you know, it's Chicago.
It happened to Joe Berrios. I mean,
well,
lost.
Everybody looks for...
Yeah.
Well, and of course, she has that baggage of doing the party line and supporting Joe Berrios for assessor, despite all of the stories and reports about assessment problems. You know, Franz Kagi wins that. But that seems like kind of part of the beginning of the end kind of things here for the organization.
I'm fascinated by it because I feel like half of this is about a challenge to her as a leader of that establishment.
Sure.
And so by...
Not even really about the city.
No, I mean, not at all. It has to do with Democrat insider politics.
Right. It really is. And then it's also that kind of trickles into some of the aldermanic races too. We want to talk about that in a moment. We're back with Rick Pearson, but we want to check in with Kim Gordon right now, see what's coming up bottom of the hour in the news.
And a British lawmaker is voting again on a Brexit strategy.
Blonde Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. We've got Justin Kaufman in with us today.
Loving
Happy
it.
To have you. And Rick Pearson.
Rick Rowland here.
We're Rick Rowland with Rick. And Rick. Well, it's the perfect little... That's your new song. I think you should... This should be your walk-on music.
Oh, that's too bright for Sunday and Sunday morning, I gotta tell you. We can't shock everybody that fast.
We're talking mayor's race, and the election day is tomorrow. Of course, early voting is still... possible for you if you'd like to take advantage of that, but
no way, you got to do it on the morning of. You got to go day of.
Get your sticker, your wristband.
Election judges, they love me.
Yeah, they do, Justin.
Nobody
you're big
got,
with them.
The
big.
I vote in the senior
donuts.
Center. I come in there. I got a lot of bits.
We bring donuts and coffee.
Do you? You one of those?
I bring
suck
my
up
smile.
To him.
I bring my smile.
They love it. Well, I was struck today watching television all day and listening to radio, and you know, the closing arguments, if you will, for these mayoral candidates. If you look at their ads, at least Lori Lightfoot's TV ad. Very positive. Shine a light on the city. Change, reform. Let's change this political machine. Let's move forward for the people of Chicago. You saw Preckwinkle with that very negative ad at still out. It was running quite a bit today about the four children killed in that tragic fire and pointing a finger in the direction of Lori Lightfoot. Something many people have said is beyond the fray. It's not something that should be part of this election conversation.
Yeah, just the fact of the tenor of the ads tell you a lot about where the candidates see things going. And when you're at the point, again, you know, she's not the incumbent, but she's Toni Preckwinkle, and people know who she is. She is still placed in that position of trying to define her opponent, which that's the first thing you do in a campaign, especially in this should have been from out of the blocks with Toni Preckwinkle, because Lori Lightfoot is still, you know, was still largely an unknown. I kind of look at this election in some respects, and I don't mean it in an ideological sense, but kind of like Bruce Rauner against Pat Quinn. And that Pat Quinn was a known quantity, but people were just, you know, had questions and weren't necessarily satisfied. And Bruce Rauner had done a masterful job of making himself into a political whiteboard that people could put their hopes, dreams, and aspirations on. Now, we saw how that turned out. But...
Well, let's stop you there, Rick. Lori Lightfoot is promising great change, busting the political machine, changing city council, making, you know, moving things forward for the people in every ward of the city. Do you doubt that she'd be able to achieve what she's saying she can do?
Well, I think certainly there'll be some council resistance, despite the fact of what we may see some change in some of these aldermanic seats. I don't think it's going to be of the magnitude of change that is going to really... The other thing, too, with Lori being an attorney and in the circles she's traveled... She actually was responding at one point in one of the debates to the Smollett issue and Rahm Emanuel's outrage, and she said, "I would, as mayor, take a more measured tone." And there are plenty of people that like Rahm Emanuel's outrage. In fact, I remember writing off the first response that he gave and called it a whitewash and tweeted that out, and somebody said, well, if anybody knows what a whitewash is, it'd be Rahm Emanuel.
Yeah, sort of set him up there.
But you know, this whole idea of affecting change, it sounds good, and Toni is right. Change takes a long time. I don't think Lori Lightfoot would necessarily be able to change things overnight or change things as quickly as those who want change would like to see them, because it's just not how the system works. And that's not just the Cook County Democratic system or the city. It's just not how the process works, because you're dealing with so many factors involved in trying to make change in any step that you make in government.
When we come back, why don't we can we talk about the aldermen? You stick around for that. I'm fascinating some of these races.
Me too.
A lot of money being pumped into some of these.
Absolutely.
And some longtime incumbents who are sort of falling, it seems, due to that desire for change against some political upstarts. Some things.
And some laziness, too.
And some laziness, all right.
Some laziness.
Laziness.
Yes.
We want to talk about laziness and more with Rick Pearson as Election Day approaches tomorrow. But let's check in with Kim Gordon to see check in and get the news here on WGN.
Brian's having some fun today.
They're playing your song again, Rick Pearson. That's the Foo Fighters. Wick with Rick Astley. Something works like it works for you, Rick. It works. I can see you dancing at the Billy Goat election night to that. Woo!
When cutting all the votes are counted and the stories have been written, yes.
And the dancing stuff.
And the dancing stuff.
Speaking of Billy Goat, maybe this is a perfect opportunity to plug your event, Kevin.
Hosting election night tomorrow night, 7 to 10 at the Billy Goat under Michigan Avenue, 430 North Michigan. We're going to have a ton of great people out, pundits, analysis, politicians, candidates. Everybody who's involved in both the general and the runoff will be there. We'll be talking about the new look city council, which might be a nice way to dovetail into our next convo here. There are some incumbents who are in this runoff that you would not expect to be there. Let's start with the 40th Ward, Pat O'Connor, who is a floor leader for Rahm Emanuel.
Right.
He's a ton of money in that race.
He hasn't. I mean, I was looking at this past. Mm-hmm. He ran unopposed up to 2015. Right. He had nobody.
Right.
Now he's in the fight of his career.
And gets in a runoff on top of it. I mean, here again, part of that establishment. And, you know, the fact of the idea of taking dislike about Rahm is something that is very a salable point here. And, you know, he wasn't even telling the media where his election night party is going to be.
No, he's a hard guy to get a hold of. So, he's going up against a community activist and former hip-hop artist, Andre Vasquez.
Yes.
But there's been some. He has a ton of money. He has $700,000 cash on hand, and it's seeing itself play out in a lot of flyers, a lot of ads. There's a new ad or a new Facebook post he put out saying how close he was to Harold Washington, which is hard to imagine since he was part of the 29 with Verdoliak. There's another ad about putting some of the lyrics from Andre Vasquez's hip-hop career on a flyer.
Right.
I mean, he's really going nasty to win this thing.
Yeah, and old school. It's old school, using a little bit of the new technology of Facebook and Instagramming, but also the direct mail pieces are just absolutely flying. And, you know, it's all about getting that 5 seconds of attention span on a mailer, on a Facebook post, something like that, that you'll retain when you go vote.
Think, Rick, that's going to play a big part in this, or do you think that this sort of anti-incumbent fever or a desire to create reform in our city is a bigger factor?
Well, every ward is its own politics.
That's true.
And it's hard not to remember that. But that having been said, when you have a mayoral race playing out against that overall thematic of change, it certainly plays a part lower down. And even the fact of getting to this point where you have 15 aldermanic runoffs with some of these veteran incumbents points to that overwhelming desire for change.
The other one that I'm so into is the 30th Ward, which is Alderman Ariel Reboyras, who's been there since, I don't know, 90s, right? He's been a Mayor Daley and a Mayor Emanuel supporter and ally. And Jessica Gutierrez, who is the daughter of Luis Gutierrez, a former congresswoman, is running against him. It actually tied in the general. I mean, it was close to her winning that thing.
Right.
And the momentum seems to be with the challenger because of her name and because of the change movement. But where are we at with the 30th Ward? Because that seems to be a big one.
I mean, I think this is going to be one of the last ones that we know about, that, you know, Reboyras is hanging in there. You know, we're getting the last day allegations of dirty tricks on both sides on our emails, which is always fun because it's like, couldn't you have done that a week ago?
Right.
You know, I can't do anything with this now. But I mean, it'll be interesting to see, you know, the Gutierrez persona, how true that holds here, because as you said, Reboyras has been around forever.
I did a piece on it that Gutierrez and Reboyras were allies.
Sure.
And Gutierrez was essentially the boss of that neighborhood, and Reboyras was handing out or doing petition gathering for him.
Mm-hmm.
He has served that establishment well, and he feels kind of stabbed in the back, if you will, the fact that Jessica's even running.
Sure. And you've got that factor, plus, you know, how Gutierrez steps down, and you've got Chuy now as the heir for Congress there, and how does that play into the Latino politics and the mix between the Mexicans and the Puerto Ricans. And I mean, it's just...
And the hipsters. The Logan Square hipsters are moving north into that war.
Well, that's true.
It's true. It's a great...
Yes. I mean, all of this is at play. I mean, and you know, this... when this is all said and done, I want to take a look back, too, at these places that have had just rapid gentrification and see how much of a factor that has played into things. I mean, when you look at the vote, the age vote splits, and you look at it in some of these wards about, because you know the older voters vote, and they all want things back the way they used to be.
Right.
Another ward that I think is really interesting is the 5th Ward, which would be down in Hyde Park and South Shore. That's going to be Leslie Harrison, who's been a longtime Progressive Caucus member. And she's in a runoff against Will Calloway, who you'd recognize to be the guy who was up front after the Laquan McDonald verdict, the Jason Van Dyke conviction. He seems to be, he's got a little bit of traction there, but
he has a lot of traction.
And he's representing a young, disenfranchised vote.
Right. No, that everybody is acknowledging that Leslie Harrison is in some serious difficulty in the 5th Ward, and that is one of the key ones to watch. You know, I we were talking, you know, the lazy segment.
Let's get back to that. What was the lazy segment?
Well, that was, I mean, Rod Sawyer in the 6th, Brookins in the 21st, mm-hmm. playing the old school. This is like, well, I don't have to go work hard because, you know, my people will come out and they'll be for me. And except in this day and age, it don't work that way. And, you know, I was talking to Brian Bernadoni from the Realtors yesterday on the show, and he said it's almost like, as much as we've got all this great technology, it's almost like the techniques of that technology, it's back to old school. It's the best way, word of mouth. You know, if you see what friends are doing, you can spread the word better than yard signs, but you still got to go knock on the doors.
Yeah.
Especially in a low turnout election, you see that all the time. And I guess that's my question for you, Rick. A lot of people are looking at these polls and saying, well, Lori Lightfoot could run away with this, and that this could be an early election night. But then you look at Preckwinkle and where her support is coming from. And she was out at the churches this weekend. She's got strong union support. Teachers Union gave her $100,000. I mean, she's got some of those troops really motivated to come out, and those people do tend to vote in our city.
Yeah,
it makes a difference.
But the question, even in a low turnout, is who turns out.
Right.
And yeah, there's great expectations that for Tony's areas of strength will be in the 18 largely African American wards, and that's where a lot of her strength came to get in the runoff.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you look at the fact that if it wasn't Lori Lightfoot running, Preckwinkle probably would have gotten the lakefront. You know, as the progressive in the race, and the fact that the lakefront is, that's Lori's vote.
That includes white liberals, that includes the gay community.
Right.
There's a lot that Tony Preckwinkle relied on in past elections she can't rely on this.
Right.
Time.
So, I mean, it's here again. The one thing, and it's been very interesting to watch because you kind of saw it initially and now it's kind of faded, was when you had 14 candidates, each of them knew all they needed was just one little sliver of support. And if they mm-hmm. really pounded that, they could get into second place, mm-hmm. get into the runoff. Then you win, you're one of the two. Now you got to kind of appeal to the city at large, including that 70% of the voters that didn't vote for you. But now, you know, we've kind of seen Tony in particular, although in some respects Lori doing it too, but Tony going back to try to shore up the base.
Yeah.
And at this stage of the game, if you have to shore up the base, that's not a good sign. And of course, you had Lori working African American churches too, but also in a way to try to hold Tony's margins down.
And kind of playing a defense. I thought it was very interesting too, and we get to inside politics, but I thought it was interesting that we saw our friend Cook County board member Bridget Gaynor mm-hmm. introducing Tony Preckwinkle at her win in the general.
Right.
But that's a sign that she needs those Lakeview wards.
That was the old yes.
Yeah, she needs those Lakeview wards to comfort Tony Preckwinkle, but I don't know if that's going to happen.
I you know, there's no evidence that it is.
Right.
But John Cass says we should be paying attention because he doesn't count Tony Preckwinkle. Your comrade over at the Trib.
Well, I don't, you know, if 2016 taught us anything, you don't count anybody out. Just by being on the ballot, you got a chance. And I'm certainly, I would not count Lori Preckwinkle or Tony Preckwinkle out. Tony, obviously, with, you know, we can talk about, you know, is this the end of the machine, whatever.
Well, I think that is a question.
But the machine's still there.
But so you
the machine has been on kind of a losing slide for a long time. particularly because of patronage and consent decrees and those kinds of...
And because of a federal probe exposing some of the key players, always, the key political powerhouses machine, in the city, and who might be connected with them and what else is to come there.
Although some of the guys you and I know, they probably, you know, they're happy if they're mentioned on that, because that shows how important that they are. They'd be the only ones who'd ever want to be on a wiretap,
It does.
I'm on the tap.
Oh, gosh. Be careful what you wish for. This does feel like a moment in time, though, here.
It does. It does. And you know, well, one, it is a moment in time, regardless of the winner.
History will be made.
Yes. And you know, there are elements of the Herald victory that you can kind of feel in this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do think for the city, there should be some sense of pride. And when I wrote about the chase for the African-American vote in the city between the two candidates, it all kind of came down to, yeah, I'm for her or I'm for her, whatever. But at the end, it was like, you know, we won't lose either way.
Hmm. Look where how far we've come.
For a black community, you know? And that's a fascinating dynamic to think of.
I think it'd be interesting when we're done with this election, and this will, I'll put this on the backs of the Tribune. You guys,
thank you.
I don't have the time, Rick. Mm-hmm. Just how that played out, the African American vote, because I'd be fascinated to see how many will turn around and say, even though these candidates both have the same skin color that I do, they're not my candidates. And I'd like to know, because with Willie Wilson losing and everything that goes into that, both of these candidates, I could see from people who are on Facebook, social media, African Americans live on the south side of Chicago. Sure. Not sure who to vote for, because Lori Lightfoot's role with the Chicago Police Board or Tony Preckwinkle in the establishment.
Or being from the other side of town.
Yeah, and there's really no a candidate that they feel like this is our Harold Washington moment.
Yeah, that I agree. And I think that's true with the younger voters, perhaps in a way that was different than in Harold's time. I mean, and certainly there was a great sense of pride among older African Americans for, you know, electing a black mayor. But there was also a younger, more progressive kind of coalition
momentum,
movement there.
Right.
And if you know, you don't, it's kind of interesting, is you don't have this opportunity with these candidates to form a coalition.
Mm-hmm.
In many respects,
it's a
series of fractures is what it is, and frankly that'll be another story, is can they sew it all back together.
That's a good point.
Done?
Reverend Jackson is calling them together for a unity pledge the day after election, regardless of what happens. Both candidates are, one will be, you know, the mayor-elect and the person who does not reign victorious tomorrow night, to come together and do just that for the city. And I think that will be good for all of us. Rick Pearson, we thank you for chilling out with us. We know tomorrow's your big day, so are you going to go sleep right now? What's the plan for you?
I'm going to go dancing at Billy Goat.
Oh,
I'm going to go get Justin's studio ready.
Get it ready over there. Scuff those new floors up.
Exactly.
Thank you, Rick. Let's check in.
Thank you, guys.
See what's coming up top of the hour in the news here on WGN with Kim Gordon.
Anna, the move by Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox's office to drop charges against Empire actor Jesse Smollett brought up protesters on both sides today.